back to Wings Nuts, the audio program that ventures to discuss each and every episode of classic 1990s sitcom Wings.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back, baby back, baby back.
I'm Jared, here with Emerson. Emerson, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Jared?
I'm doing really good.
Nice.
We've gathered here today to talk Season 2, Episode 8, High Anxiety. And this hot little episode debuted on November 23rd, 1990. Right in that Thanksgiving pocket. Thanksgiving was happening somewhere in there.
November 23rd, 1990. That's right.
Yeah. This episode was produced by Roz Doyle, directed by Noam Pitlick, and written by Bruce Rasmussen, making his triumphant return. We highlighted him before. He's currently working on The Conners as a producer writer.
You remember which episode he had previously directed?
I know. I don't. I wish I did my research. I want to see if it's as bad as this one is.
Okay. Well, I'll do let's do the wiki synopsis.
Hit it.
Joe is grounded due to hypertension with the unreliable Brian his only option for keeping the airline running. When Brian quits and Joe can't afford a new pilot, Sandpiper's future seems in doubt. Guest star, Robert Colbert.
Okay.
And that's, you say Colbert, because I like looked him up on Wikipedia to see if there's any relationship, either or with Stephen Colbert. And they specify that his name was pronounced differently than Stephen Colbert and another Colbert that I was not familiar with.
Yeah, you got to hit that T with Robert.
Got to hit that T. Colbert.
Cool. That synopsis works. We had some guest stars this episode.
Yes, we did.
That's fun. Robert Colbert as Deke Braverman.
Wow, what a name.
I know. And he had a early career in TV westerns, and he was on My Favorite Martian, Perry Mason, Time Tunnel, Mission Impossible, Knight Rider. He had a pretty decent run on Young and the Restless. In the film I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, and Frasier.
Wow, yeah.
Then we had Harris Shore as Dr. Bennett. It seems like he was more of a stage guy, but Wings was right there in the start of his TV acting gig. He had a role on Seinfeld, Step by Step, ER, Party of Five, and Weeds.
Very cool. By the way, we found out that a set that we saw in a previous episode became the set for Frasier.
Oh, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so it's like a few episodes ago, the Nightmare Music, where like the Minneapolis conductor comes to town and Helen auditions for him and he tears her apart. The honeymoon suite that he's staying in becomes the main set for Frasier.
That's so cool.
It's not completely the same. It doesn't look the same completely, but I guess it was the same stage.
Yeah, I can picture those like little sunken living room with the stairs and the big one. How did they move that set from Nantucket to Seattle? Do you think they took it by boat or do you think they flew it?
Oh, Jared. Can I give you a fey look? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I asked. By the way, I'm going to give 2 stripes to this cold open. Like, I liked that we got Lowell. There's a few good jokes, but I hate that. I'm sorry. And Lowell's like, yeah. Oh, it's okay. It was a long time ago. No. Sorry, I asked. And then like that little like Faye, like giving a like, oh, I'm just being cute. But no, mm-hmm. you're being kind of a jerk.
Yes.
I'm not a fan.
I agree.
Hey, like I was like, hey, Jared, let me ask you about one of your relatives that may or may not have died. And then immediately be like, oh, sorry, I asked.
Yeah. We don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
We had Joe Steele, a.k.a. Joe Brewer, as Nurse Carrie. And what a cool career it looks like she has. A lot of visual effects artist credits. And then she acted in the film Rotor and Vice Academy 1 and 2. And on the show Ellen.
Yeah, and it sounds like, because you, like, early in her IMDb credits are a lot of like Madonna videos and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think she founded a studio called Steel Studios that did a lot of like visual effects.
Yeah.
And so I think that she became kind of, I think that she's Steel by marriage. And so I don't know if it's her husband's company, but I think that she was like, you know, like the main person, like the kind of.
Yes.
And I tried to like find more information about that because she's not currently listed on their website as like an active, you know, contact.
Yeah.
But I'm curious if you're out there.
Maybe
you know,
retired. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on to our show. Give us some free visual effects work. You know, I don't know.
Well, a lot of the stuff she worked on too isn't movies or shows you would think of as having visual effects, like a small indie movie I noticed on there, Humboldt County. But, you know, there's visual effects in every movie, and sometimes they're so slight you don't notice them at all, or you shouldn't notice them. Then some other credited extras, but they didn't have any lines or anything, so fuck them. Hey, what's in the news? Did you read any news this week?
I did, yeah. Did you?
I sure did.
Bum, 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 bum. I think it's page 5B. Release of tick attacking wasps set for next spring. Did you see this?
I did.
Yeah, I was like, the first thing I thought of when I read that headline is, there was an old lady who swallowed a spider. To eat up the fly that was all up inside her. Like, this always, you know, this is always the plot line of like, just various movies where things just keep getting worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds, hasn't happened yet. And then I like tried to do some follow-up research to see if there is like an over infestation of wasps in Nantucket currently. And yes. I did find that there are like oak trees that are being attacked by wasps, but I don't know if they're the same wasps or if they're like different wasps.
I think they're like the descendants of these wasps.
Yeah. But yeah, like they're trying to like knock out that Lyme disease,
mm-hmm.
which is mm-hmm. awful. Like I have a friend that got Lyme disease and she has to take like a ton of medication for it. It's really awful.
It's bad.
Yeah.
There was a pullout section in the Inquirer and Mirror having to do with kids. It's like the little kids corner of the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And I loved these little, I don't know if you'd call them mini essays or, you know, musings from these children, but I like this one from Karina Rios.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the second grade. It's entitled Venezuela and Nantucket. In Venezuela, we don't have fun because we go to school in the morning and we can't play with my cousin because he goes to school at the time we get out of school. I think that Nantucket is better than Venezuela. When we go to the beach in Nantucket, we play with sand. We cover our feet with sand. In Venezuela, when we want to go in the water, Daddy and Mom remind us about the sharks. They come around the beach and the whales, too. We never came to the beach. In Venezuela, when we went to school, we didn't learn anything. I think Nantucket schools are better than Venezuela. Nantucket is Halloween. Venezuela doesn't have Halloween. Venezuela has lots of toys, but they are too expensive to buy. Nantucket is better. And I think that may be like the future bride of Juan Guaido or something, but I liked that.
I also just picture like the Nantucket t-shirt being like, oh, I just love this.
Yes.
You just highlight all the things that make America better than any other country.
Than that shithole country you came from.
Yeah. But she's like, but you guys do have really great cocaine. So on page 12B, I found a really fun article called Island Bird Sightings.
No.
All right. So I'm not going to like drag you too far down the rabbit hole, but I just thought that like this is funny. It starts off. Whom are you? Asked the caterpillar to Alice in Through the Looking Glass. Remember that readership survey last August? Well, the results have been evaluated, and they revealed much about island bird sightings readers. Island bird sightings, and then in parentheses, IBS. First ran in December 1986. After 10 active years of birding on Nantucket, this author decided it was time to start a bird sightings network where an up-to-date birding information would be available both to residents and visitors alike. A scissor-tailed flycatcher that showed up at Sankatie Golf Course in late November 1986 provided just enough inspiration to begin the column. And a Harris sparrow on Westchester Street Extension appearing a week later was just a little reward. And I wasn't going to read anything from this until I saw that it was like that it was a birdwatching article about birdwatching article. Just like some meta thing being like, isn't it great that we do this?
No, I'd like to say from the future, it is not. I wish you didn't do that. I wish you lived your life differently, whatever your name is.
I still love that shit.
Well, you know, you got IBS.
Mm-hmm. I do have IBS.
Well,
ladies.
Ladies. Well, I saw a cute little column called Voices of Nantucket. What are you thankful for? Is this on your list too?
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'll do a few of these people and you could do a few. It's one of those kind of little new things they do in newspapers where they put people's picture, then a little quote under them. So we have Frank Rose, whose profession is carpenter. And he says, I've had four back operations and I just got rear-ended a couple of weeks ago. I'm thankful to be alive and walking around. You want to grab one?
Yeah, I love that one. Can I jump over to Eric Peterson, self-proclaimed handyman? I'm pathetically thankful for the bouffant hairdos that created the chlorofluorocarbons that made this warm day in November. This dude's wearing a turtleneck, calling out global warming, living his best.
That's scam.
Mm-hmm.
I got Neil Toman. He's a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thankful I'm out of debt. I just paid off my college loans and my Visa bill.
I got Jeff Taylor, Barrett's bus driver and former North Carolina resident. I'm thankful for finding grits in the A&P.
Wow. What a loss to North Carolina that Jeff came to Nantucket. I got Libby Oldham. She's the Chamber of Commerce executive director.
Yeah.
I'm thankful they haven't started shooting in Saudi Arabia yet, and I pray that they never will.
All right, I got Eliza Herner, receptionist and potentially former prostitute. That's my own a commentary based on her quote. I'm thankful I have a bohunk stud to keep me off the streets this winter. Like, is she like find some guy that can keep her from hooking herself this winter? Off the streets.
We should all be thankful to those bohunk studs out there.
Oh yeah.
Okay, this is my last one.
All right.
Arthur Stojak, UPS driver.
I'm thankful the Whalers won.
And the last thing I have from the Enquirer and Mirror is the front page. There's a picture of like a couple of cheerleaders in front of like a crowd of cheering football fans. And it says, touchdown. You don't need to see the play. The results are reflected in the faces of cheerleaders Casey Sayre and Becky Holdgate. The Whalers went 10-0 by beating Martha's Vineyard 38-14. Casey Sayre and Becky Holdgate are both still in Nantucket. Both have like additional last names, so they're married women. And one of them, I think Casey Sayre, was like in a play a couple years ago. And Becky Holdgate is a photographer, and like her photography website talks about how being a Nantucketer from birth, born and raised, she has a unique perspective that like she brings to her events, etc.
Wow.
Crazy. You know, these girls are still there.
Yeah. Made a whole life in Nantucket.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to hop over to the Boston Globe. Quick headline, Thatcher to resign after 11 and a half years. So Margaret Thatcher resigned, and that's good news to the world. I think we've all been pissing on her grave ever since.
It's bad news for punk rock music everywhere.
Yes. I don't have too much to say about Thatcher. She's just a piece of shit.
Well, I mean, she did what she did. She made the world a better place, and so we're happy that we had her, and then yeah, let her retire in peace.
No. She was like the Reagan of the UK.
Exactly what I'm saying. She was a
austerity
great leader.
And no, she was, you know,
she was a great inspiring leader.
A terrible person.
So on page 55, they have an ad. If you're buying a CD player, why not get one that plays movies too? And this is a combination LaserDisc and a CD player advertising Back to the Future 3, Bird on a Wire, The Blues Brothers, Harvey. They also have E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Parenthood, Jetsons the movie, Twins, and this Discover the New CLD 980, Pioneer's most affordable combination CD / LaserDisc player, which is so wild to me that this existed.
Amazing. Yeah.
Because like I don't want to listen to CDs through my TV audio. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but like I just never had that inkling.
Well, some people got that whole system hooked up, so the TV comes through the same speakers that the stereo comes out of.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, in that
especially
case, that's great.
Back then, you know, someone like Brian or something would set that up for in case he brings ladies over.
That's right. Which is, you know, that could be like a problem if like Joe and Brian are trying to watch something at the same time. Because they have such different tastes.
How's this for a headline? Bush in Gulf cites Iraq nuclear threat. So Bush was visiting the troops in Saudi Arabia, kind of tossing turkeys around for Thanksgiving. And I got a quote from Mr. Bush here.
Every day that passes brings Saddam Hussein one step closer to realizing his goal of a nuclear weapons arsenal. And that's another reason, frankly, why more and more our mission is marked by a real sense of urgency.
And he's yakking at these troops, and one of these troops says to him, "Thank you, sir, for showing up here in the desert and showing your support." And Bush, you know, in a very relatable quote to these 18-year-old soldiers, said,
"That's what Woody Allen said. 90% of life is showing up. You're doing a fine job. We're so proud of you."
Because the troops love those Woody Allen references.
Oh, sure. mission accomplished.
Yes. And just... again, it's another case of the press doing the work of the state and ginning up fear that, like, realistically, Saddam was not close to having nukes, you know, and there was no nuclear threat. So
on page 116, we have Names and Faces by Michael Blowen, kind of just like what's going on in entertainment news. It's just kind of a sad little thing. A Stone's marriage is on the rocks. Rolling Stones bass guitarist Bill Wyman's 17-month marriage to a woman 34 years his junior is ending. Wyman's lawyer, Wright Webb Sirrett, said yesterday. Wyman, 54, and the 20-year-old Mandy Smith, a former model, were married in June 1989. Wyman had been dating Miss Smith since she was 13.
You're fucking lying.
Recently, they have lived apart while Ms. Smith was hospitalized with an undisclosed illness.
Wait a minute. They just put that shit out there like that?
Yep.
Rolling Stone bassist Bill Wyman was dating a 13-year-old?
Yep.
And then he was dating a 14-year-old and a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old as she progressively got older.
Mm-hmm.
Then she turned 18 and Cough Cough got a little sick and he just dumped her.
I guess
when
so.
When she's 20.
Yeah.
That's fucking disgusting. How come we
Isn't
don't
it
hear
awful?
How come we don't hear, you know, we hear about like Jerry Lewis and stuff. How come we never hear about a Rolling Stone was a pedo?
Well, the other one was.
Which one right? was?
Or no, it was The Who.
Oh, no, they say right. that about Pete Townsend. I don't really buy it.
You think he was just doing research?
I think I just
child porn?
Yeah, I think I just really like the music of The Who, so I don't want to believe that.
Are you like you don't like the Rolling Stones though?
The Rolling Stones don't do it for me.
I like the Rolling Stones.
Ugh,
you got anything else from that?
Yeah. Man? Yeah. Oh okay. God. I got this headline. Next year, a phone in every pocket? And then
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
And then they have a sub headline, portable cellular phones cannot get much smaller. One Mitsubishi model is 6.3 inches long, about the distance between your ear and your mouth. And the article starts off with, pick up Motorola's MicroTac portable cellular telephone and you will be overcome with the urge to say, beam me up, Scotty. It is that small and that way out. Like
that's amazing.
Yeah, just in case you forget, like sometimes it's easy to feel like 1990 was just yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But you get an article like this that reminds you that times have changed a lot and we old as fuck.
Oh, yeah. So I found a fun article. This is on page, 121. A feast of movie turkeys to pop in your VCR. And, you know, this is the day after Thanksgiving. Why should all the turkeys stay on the table this holiday weekend? Why should the VCR go hungry? Turkeys constitute by far the largest category of movies. The only difficulty in listing a handful below is confining it to 10. We could go back to this category year after year and not begin to exhaust it. The great virtue of turkey movies is that you can watch them while half-stuffed or even fully torpid and not feel you're missing anything important. Anyway, here they are. White meat, dark meat, stuffing, drumsticks and all. And the first movie they suggest, I chose this because there's one I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But the first one they suggest is Bride of the Monster from 1955, The Conqueror 1956, Exorcist II, The Heretic, The Greek Tycoon, The Oscar, The Pride and the Passion, Robot Monster, The Silver Chalice, Wrestling Women versus the Aztec Mummy from 1965. And then we have Grease.
Grease?
1978. Until Peter Bogdanovich's At Long Last Love, which murdered Cole Porter, makes it to cassette, it's a toss-up between this turkey and Song of Norway as worst movie musical. This one takes the nod because it was easier to get right, having as its model the perky, funky stage musical upon which it was based. But overblown production values suffocate it. When Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta aren't draining the grit out of it, its flotilla of hot rods and mushroom clouds of hairspray are.
What the?
I grew up like thinking that movie wasn't great, but I kind of do love it now that I'm older.
I feel that movie's like almost universally loved. Like I'm with you. Like it's a good movie. I watched a lot when I was a youngster, but
I would,
that's not a turkey to me.
Yeah.
I haven't seen most of the movies on that list and it makes me want to, maybe those are some hidden gems actually.
They could be. Yeah. They're probably fun. I mean, it also sounds like whoever wrote the article is kind of celebrating them as like fun watches.
But it also seems like I feel like this person might have written that article because they have a very specific grudge against Grease and just wanted the opportunity to lump it in with all those other kind of drive-in titles.
Yeah, maybe.
Wow. It was a typo. They said Grease 2, right?
I thought that, and that's why I like when I got to the part where they said the worst musical, with the worst movie musical, I thought. like I read it in my head as sequel, worst movie sequel. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, they mean Grease 2, but they didn't. No, for sure they mean the
that's
first one.
That's bonkers, yeah. Man. That's bonkers. Cool. Well, speaking of Hollywood, mm-hmm. I like this headline. Gregory launches fast for Gulf peace with Plymouth Vigil. And I just wanted to highlight this because it's about Dick Gregory, the comedian, kind of the anti-Cosby. He's actually a good guy. And he's had a long history of activism, and I just thought this was cool. He's doing a hunger strike to protest the upcoming invasion of Iraq. And just a quote from Dick Gregory here. Bush is not even trying to talk this through. He's not giving Saddam Hussein a way out. He keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. He just looks like he's looking for a fight. There's a possibility Bush can back himself into a war if we just let him. And that was all true.
Yeah, it's awful. I like read that too, and I was like, is he in a position where his hunger strike will actually like bring enough attention to this? I mean, there's an article written about it, which is great.
Yeah.
So no. I was trying to, yeah, I don't know who the guy was, but I'm glad.
Yeah, he stopped the Iraq War.
Yeah.
It never happened. No,
well,
no.
I think it was it was that Nantucketers' prayers.
Yes.
About no guns being fired in Saudi Arabia, which is not even the same country. Sorry.
Yeah, but the in his long history of activism, like this was not one of his more successful campaigns. But he's one of those just principled dudes who you could always count on for being on the right side of history. So
that's great.
Hats off to Dick Gregory. I appreciate him.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Headline, Ninja Turtles topple.
Oh, wow. I saw that and I forgot to like note it down.
Emerson's usually on the Ninja Turtles beat here, but I'll take this one.
Ninja Turtles, yeah.
Three Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles took a gnarly spill during filming of their sequel, and the dude playing Hero in the Half Shell, Donatello, broke his ankle. Stuntman actor Stephen Ho required surgery in a cast after the accident Wednesday near Wilmington, North Carolina. He and two other players were hurt when a net holding them in the air gave way. A steel cable holding the net snapped, and the turtles fell 6 feet onto the sand-covered stage at Carolco Film Studios, said Michael Casey, publicist for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Secret of the Ooze. Nick Palmo, who plays Michelangelo, and Larry Lamb, who plays Leonardo, were treated for minor injuries and released. The fourth Ninja Turtle, Raphael, was not in the scene.
And it was Stephen Ho, right, that broke his ankle?
Yes.
I found I found the scene real quick. Hold on. Let me just play the audio.
Oh, whoa, cowabunga. Oh, that's a gnarly cheese pizza. Ooh, that's going to take a strain.
Wow, I can't believe they left all that in the movie.
I know. Well, that's like free production value when the stuntman breaks a limb.
Well, cool. Should we jump into the episode?
Yes. You alluded to the cold open earlier, and yeah, this is a turkey. It's got Faye giving bad juju to Lowell.
I want my cold opens to like stand alone and not have anything to do with the plot line. And so I do not like that Lowell shows up later in the episode with the metal detector.
This episode is like a patchwork of ideas that either don't have a beginning to them or don't have an end, or they're like not fully formed ideas just strung together. And the metal detector is one of them. Like Lowell, like you said, comes back later with the metal detector again. And it's not really punctuating a great joke or anything. And I think it just shows up the two times and never again, and doesn't figure into the plot. It can't really be called a, a B or a C story on its own. And that was just imminently frustrating to me.
Yeah, agreed. So like in the cold open, Lowell pops in with the metal detector. Faye asks him if he's found anything good. He's like, he like lists a bunch of like, you know, terrible things, but he like lulls it up. Oh, I found this flattened mm-hmm. piece of rusted metal, half an antenna. Like he's got like all these like, and like a medical bracelet. And then he's like, maybe I'll give it to my wife. And Faye's like, does your wife have angina? And Lowell's like, no, she's got an aunt so-and-so.
Does she have angina?
No, she had an aunt Sophie. But she died of a heart attack.
I appreciate a good play on words.
Yeah, same here. He says that his wife's aunt died from a heart attack. And then Faye says, sorry. And he goes, oh, it's okay. It happened a long time ago. And then she goes, no, sorry, I asked. And then she cocks her head a couple times and does mm-hmm. like a real like kind of cutesy look that like, oh, I hated it.
That was a turkey for me.
Yeah. I'm going to go like one stripe actually. It like really just like bummed me out.
On that cold open, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say right off the bat, it's like not a very funny episode, but I actually kind of like pieces of it.
Yeah, this episode frustrated me. We'll get into some of the other spaghetti they threw at the wall, but like I mentioned, I just felt like things didn't go anywhere. There was unwarranted emotions to some of the scenes, like forced emotional conflict. Like introducing a metal detector, okay, I'm ready. There's a lot of funny things you can do with Lowell and a metal detector, and it wasn't, nothing funny was done with it.
Yeah.
Not once did he put it up to Roy's metal plate.
Yeah. Oh my God, that would have been great.
Like, not once.
Not once. That would have been so much better.
And then I'm on the edge of my seat. When we come back from the intro, they're having a blood drive in the hangar, which a lot of stuff you could do with that.
Yes.
But why are they having a blood drive in the hangar? Yeah, like what would you say is like the A story of this?
The A story is that Joe gets grounded because he has high blood pressure. He can't rely on Brian, and he hits the point where he almost sells the airline to Roy, and then Brian returns and agrees to be his pilot. And then like Joe's conflict is like never fully resolved, but at least he has Brian to fly for him.
Yes.
I don't know if the feature of the show is that Joe is like a straight up manager and that he doesn't fly anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think they would do.
No, I think he probably gets that hypertension under control and gets back in the air.
Oh, you mean he goes to the store and buys some baby aspirin?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good idea. How about that?
Yeah. Why didn't you do that the first time after you saw your doctor?
Or how about a doctor being a doctor and not just like a fucking narc?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so scene one, we're in the hangar. So there's
Wait.
Yeah.
I want to get into this. What would you say the B story is?
The B story is that Joe can't find his pilot wings, I guess?
Yes. Yeah, Joe can't find his pilot wings.
I wrote that this episode kind of like treads the water of like a, I don't know if that's the right terminology. It kind of feels like a magical realism.
Well, okay, I would say the C story is of Angel visits Joe.
Yes. Dude, I wrote that down.
And I don't know. I don't know about, I feel like if you have an angel in your story, they should come earlier in the story, and all the scenes following the angel appearing should some way connect to the fact that you have a protagonist being visited by an angel.
And the angel should have like more weight on what happens as opposed to just kind of a punchline, like a not yes. even super great punchline.
Yes, but
so like just to get into it, scene one, mm-hmm. we're in the hangar, there's a blood drive going on. Joe's like, you know, like he doesn't want to donate blood. It seems like he's like kind of being cagey about being there, and then his doctor shows up and kind of like mm-hmm. snags him, and it seems like Joe was trying to avoid this doctor. Like, mm-hmm. he knows he's overdue for, like, a checkup. And he also seems to know that he's going to, like, fail his blood pressure test.
Yeah.
His doctor, you know, puts the cuff around his arm, does the test, says that his blood pressure is too high, and that he's going to report it to the FAA. And so Joe is grounded. And so that's how the episode ends. And like other fun stuff happens, so we can jump on that later.
Okay, I'm wondering how they came to have a blood drive in a hangar, which doesn't seem like the ideal location to have a blood drive. Like, people who want to donate, you know, if there's any civilians that want to donate and it's not just airport staff, they'd have to come to the airport, pay mm-hmm. for parking, walk through, and then walk through, like, Joe's office, I guess, or the terminal. And it's awful ridiculous to me. But then if the organization you're doing a blood drive for, if the doctor for that organization then tells you they're going to narc on you to the FAA, I'd be like, I'd be, if I were Joe, I'd hold that over his head and be like, I can end this blood drive right now, man. Like, get the fuck out. Take a cookie with you. Blood donation in general, I have a lot of thoughts on. It's like, it's a huge scam, basically. Like, the U.S. is one of the few countries in the world where it's legal to sell blood. And 3% of our national GDP is blood sales. We sell a lot of blood to other countries. So, like, when people donate to the Red Cross is just selling your blood. You're just, you might as well just, like, write a check to the board of directors of the Red Cross. It's a chump move to donate blood for free, that is. But, like, have you ever sold blood or sold plasma?
No, but I've donated blood plenty of times.
Yeah, I did when I was younger, but, like, in my adulthood, for a couple of years, I sold plasma, and that's the way to go, man. For just one sitting, you can earn, like, $50-$60, and it's good for you. It, like, cleans out your blood, and then you get fresh new blood in there. Your body just makes it again.
Cool.
And one thing I thought, I loved the moment with Roy and Lowell on the cots.
Yeah.
And, like, they look like two people who have, like, donated a lot of blood or sold a lot of blood, because they're doing all the right moves, like squeezing.
Lowell squeezing, yeah.
They're squeezing the little thing in their hand to get the blood moving, and then when Lowell starts kicking, I can't tell you how many times I was at, like, Octapharma Plasma, and you just see, like, a row of dudes and a couple gals, like, kicking their legs in the air and moving their arms around to, like, get that blood going faster.
Uh-huh.
I think it's ridiculous and unsanitary to, like, have a blood drive in an airplane hangar.
Yeah. Well, I wrote that the set deck is pretty great. Like, but I also wrote that, like, would Joe's hangar, because that is Joe's hangar, right?
Yeah, it's a Sandpiper Air hangar.
I mean, where's his plane? I guess he just has the plane parked outside or something.
Actually, they show it in the shot right before they go into the scene, the establishing shot. They show the plane parked outside the hangar.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that.
So I thought that was a good attention to detail.
Nice. Well, I wrote, like, would Joe's hangar have, like, a bunch of used tires on an upper shelf?
Oh, I didn't see that.
It looks great. It has, like a great, like, you know, like,
similitude.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, Joe being the OCD guy, too, like, it feels like he wouldn't want to have, like, a bunch of, because like a hoarder would have a bunch of.
Are they airplane tires?
I think so.
How do you know they're not new?
Well, yeah, if you look at it, because basically, like, they look worn, and they're all, like, different shapes and sizes.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're a hoarder, you'd be like, well, maybe one day I'll have the right kind of plane that this would go to.
Yes.
But it doesn't feel like Joe's the kind of guy. Maybe Lowell. Maybe this is, like, Lowell's Lowell space.
I don't know, though. Like, Roy has at least two hangars, possibly more. I think Roy has a lot more hangar space where you can. Or, heck, why didn't they do the blood drive there?
Yeah. No, doing it in my goddamn spot. So I also thought it was funny that Helen seems put upon, that she's, like, finds out that she's donating cookies. Like, one, it's kind of cool that we find out that Helen bakes.
Yes.
Because I wrote that I want to see, like, a whole episode where we just follow Helen in the kitchen. Like, yeah, this is where I do my baking. Blah, 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 blah. And I do this and that. make food. I make a small saucepan full of soup for the day.
Is this an episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
Oh, that would
stop
love.
At Helen's Cafe.
I would love that. I would love to see, like a Guy Fieri with, like, a pair of sunglasses on top of his spiky hair, like, dipping his grubby fingers into, like, her saucepan, and you don't skimp on the butter. You ever hooked up that cello to an amplifier? Get some fuzz pedals going. I think that, like, I love Brian flirting with the nurse, calling her name is Carrie, and he makes the joke about, like, oh, you look a lot better without the bucket of blood.
Yeah.
And then she like, kind of, like low-key disses him in a great way.
But she should. Like, I hate when people make name jokes, like, about my name. Do you get that with Emerson?
Not too often, no.
No one's like, hey, Emerson, where's Lake and Palmer?
Oh yeah, I do get that sometimes.
Like shit like that.
That's not a long time actually. Yeah.
Well, I guess if someone with your name was famous for selling sandwiches and being a pedophile, then it might annoy you more.
Oh yes. Oh my God, that, and is that why your profile picture is you holding that oversized pair of pants? You know what's crazy though is that like I haven't gone to Subway ever since the whole Jared thing. Because like he was their spokesperson for like what, 15 years?
Yeah.
And then they just drop him like that just based on accusations before he's even convicted. No show loyalty. Some loyalty, Subway.
Yeah.
I also just fucking hate Subway.
It's awful, yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, so like Brian's nurse says like, "Oh, you got great forearms." And he's like, "Oh, thanks." And she's like, "Yeah. Muscle tone really like makes it harder to donate blood."
That's one of the very few jokes I noted as a good joke.
And yeah, I like that
was,
one.
That was, and Brian was super cute when in a wide shot, him and the nurse are walking over to the bed and he's kind of like waddling in a weird waddle. I thought it was like super cute.
Yeah. Do you think the people in there were like, "Wow, do I feel lightheaded from the airplane fumes or from the blood I'm giving?"
Exactly. I would not be donating blood in there.
Yeah. I one time gave blood. I gave blood on New Year's Eve, and up in like La Cañada, and like I was like, "Oh, this is like close to where I went to high school," and I hadn't been there in a while, so I was like, "Look, after I give blood, let's, you know, you gotta sit for a while. You have to like you know, eat the cookie and kind of like let your body recover." And so once I did that, I like walked to the school, and I didn't realize that like the first stretch of it was like uphill, and I felt so weak. I didn't realize like how weak I felt.
Oh man. And then the fireworks began. It was New Year's Eve, right?
New Year's Eve, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it's pretty fun like having Lowell and Roy like an adjacent cots. Roy obviously very uncomfortable with like this whole situation. And then you have like Lowell just like, you know, saying the worst possible thing. "What's the matter? You know, like having like a needle stuck into you right now and like blood flowing out of you?"
Lowell is goosing him.
He's goosing him.
The only other thing I appreciate about this scene is, you know, you see the woman with red hair who works at Aeromass in there as well. Like she's donating or something. And it just got me thinking, like, she's in just about every episode, probably every episode except for maybe the pilot. And I feel bad for her. She never gets a line or anything. And then you get all these people with walk-on roles and just have one or two lines, and they get immortalized on IMDb, but I can't find the name of the actor that played her character anywhere. Throw her a line one of these episodes.
Yeah, give her a line. I also wrote that I think that the prop people did a great job with the blood bags, which I'm like, I guess it wouldn't be that hard to like just get like an unused blood bag and just like put ketchup in it. But it looks,
well, even
you know,
like the blood, the line coming out of Roy and Lowell, you can see the blood in there. Yeah, it's great attention to detail.
Yeah, like because all you have to do is like kind of like run ketchup through it, let it harden overnight maybe, and then just like tape it to their arm, and then you have like a realistic looking blood bag. And then so Joe is looking for his gold wings, which are good luck.
Yeah, because he got them when he was a child.
Yeah, and I like enjoyed this like interaction where he's saying like he's telling Faye about how he was on an airplane out of Chicago and it was his first time flying, and that the stewardess gave him like a pair of wings, and like it meant so much to him, and he like knew at that moment that he was going to be a pilot. Mm-hmm. And then Faye is like, "This is uncanny, you know, back in the days there was like a nervous kid on my plane and like I gave him a pair of wings to make him calm." And Joe's like, "Are you saying that that I'm that little boy?" And she goes, "Not unless you were a little black child." Which I thought, like, I don't know if I should be like, if I should find something offensive about that punchline, but like I thought it was like a really fun punchline, basically like taking the wind out of his sails.
Yeah, she blew the wind into his sails, and then
yeah, Yes. So yeah, scene two is going to be Joe's office, and this is the scene where like Joe, where Roy offers to buy a sandpaper air. Like, so Helen comes in, brings Joe a sandwich, and she's like trying to like comfort him because he's been grounded from the pushy ass doctor. When Joe said, I can't right now, the doctor was like, sit down. I don't take no for an answer as a doctor. It's just like the doctor at a blood drive. I'm going to examine you right now in the middle of this whole.
I know.
Yeah.
I would have been like, what the fuck? No, I'll come. How about I come to your office in an hour? And I don't trust your medical powers here in my airplane hangar.
Yeah. I feel like this was like hugely overstepping his bounds as a doctor. Plus, yes. Like, yeah, you have patient, doctor-patient confidentiality. And like, this guy is like, in the middle of this open hangar where Joe is like around like various professionals that he works with.
Yeah.
You know, announcing, because he gets on like the loudspeaker and he goes, attention, Tom Fields Air, owner of Sandpaper Air, Joe Hackett is unfit to fly. And this has nothing to do with the fact that he fucked my ex-wife. Yeah, that doctor's got a vendetta. So Lowell comes in to comfort Joe after Helen brings the sandwich. And he's like, yeah, you know what you can do is like get a crowbar in there and just pry it out. And Joe's like, what are you talking about? Also, how did you feel about Joe putting that folder back into his cabinet?
I thought it was a bit forced, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because he's such a OCD guy.
Yeah.
His cabinet would never get that tight. He would have like rotated the rows around, and you know, but it was a punctuation to the point that he is tightly wound and full of stress.
So I wrote down at the top of my my notes, OCD violations.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, this is times where we can keep track of times where Joe doesn't act in an OCD manner. Mm-hmm. Which is almost more of like calling out the continuity supervisor. So
yeah, because he would have, someone with his level of OCD would never have gotten the file drawer to get in that state of tightness.
Yeah,
and he would have had like a proven technique for himself that works for getting a file just where it should go.
Absolutely, and like in that situation right now where he's like trying to get that folder in. He is going to pull the drawer out and then reshuffle everything and then leave space for like new stuff. He's going to have to buy like a new cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
He's to like move stuff into the next cabinet over because, yeah, it's like, I think I might be like a little bit OCD myself. And like, as soon as like my, like, you know, when I put my clean laundry away, as soon as like they're bunching up or like not stacking the way that they should, I'm like taking every piece of clothing out of that drawer and then refolding it and put not refolding everything, but refolding as I have to and like putting everything back mm-hmm. in.
And yeah, like making it work.
Yeah.
You're not throwing your clothes up in the air and against the wall.
Yeah.
My favorite moment in this scene is when Roy is trying to comfort Joe. And he goes, tisk, tisk.
Yeah, Roy's king.
That's such a great like little affectation.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Good, good. I can't tell you how sorry I am to hear about you being grounded.
Thanks, Roy. I appreciate it.
And like he's wearing his like his red vest and his like he looks fine, but like when we do the next scene, I want to talk about his outfit because he looks awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like Lowell reveals that Joe's car got sideswiped by the milk truck.
And 3 gallons of milk fell in the back of his car.
Yes, yeah. Lowell does this thing, and he goes, like, but don't worry, I didn't tell him about those bottles of milk. And he does like a little like punch in the gut move.
Uh-huh. I like that too, like his little ha ha ha.
Yeah, me too. Like, hey, buddy.
So does Joe drive a convertible?
I don't know. Yeah. What did we never see his car, do we?
We know that he got like 46 tickets thanks to Brian.
Mm-hmm. Man, Roy really plays it up in that scene. It's so funny when he walks in. He's just like, oh, Joe.
We all knew he was like being so disingenuous.
He just wants to buy Joe's airline and I guess create a monopoly.
I know, a Nantucket monopoly.
Yeah, so Joe's like, yeah, like Roy's like comforting him, and then, you know, he's like, well, is there anything I could do? And then he's like, I'm not selling my airline. Well, and then, yeah, he completely changes his attitude. Well, if you change your mind, you know where I'm at.
Yes. Yeah.
Great acting, David Shorma.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Then we move on to, we're in the terminal, and Joe is kind of... This is the big scene where Joe ends up firing Brian.
Right, yeah. And so Joe is, yeah, super frazzled. He's like, he's chatting with Faye, but he's like, yeah, he's like still can't find the wings. Is that what he's talking about?
The wings, and Faye's like going to put up notices for them, which I would be super embarrassing to me if someone put up notices around the place that I work about like a lost child's trinket.
Ooh, okay. You haven't been into work this week yet, have you? So, okay, I'll yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, and so basically they set up that Joe's back in his office, and then Roy comes through looking like a fucking stud.
Brian's tire report.
So, Brian opening with a beautiful feather tie in that in that blood drive scene.
I wrote down that it looked like a rosy tornado or like the eye of Sauron to me.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I saw like a beautiful pattern with like feathers kind of running down the front. And then I wrote, plus that shirt looking like a dour foyer wallpaper. Like it looks like the wallpaper in like a haunted mansion. I loved it. I wrote A+. And then the second tie is a repeat.
Return of the tie. It was like the heart bosom kind of tie.
And I wrote down, it looks like acorns kind of.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what's going on. Third tie, the horse head is back. Top notch.
The horse
tie.
Returned. Is that the third? Is this the third appearance of the horse?
I think it might be the third or the fourth.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that tie.
And then I wrote Roy in scene three with a beautiful tan jacket, patches on elbows, and a fantastic tie. Thick diagonal lines, purple, red, and lavender. Like, Roy looks great in the scene.
You know what that first Brian tie kind of looked like, too?
What's that?
I saw a video on TikTok today, and it made me think of that tie. Did you see that video that's going around in Turkey of the cloud that looked like either a UFO or a vagina?
No.
It's like bright, kind of reddish pink, and it kind of looks like a vagina UFO.
Does it start off and it's like a voice says, "When Bay won't give any fee," and then it goes, "No, oh no, oh no, 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 no." That's my impersonation of TikTok.
Oh no, no, no.
When so and so won't do thing.
This cloud appeared in Turkey, and it looks like a vagina.
Like, I don't know why everyone does like the robot voice on TikTok.
But. Yeah. I am such an old man. I don't have TikTok. And so I'm surprised that you have TikTok, because I feel like with your conspiracy theories, you wouldn't feel comfortable having like an app that takes information.
Oh, dude, I love TikTok. That's where I get all my conspiracy theory information.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah.
Dude, they got videos of like giants walking on hills on there and like, all the adrenochrome stuff. That's where you're going to get your good adrenochrome news.
So yeah, we have Roy, and he's got like a little manila folder, and he's telling Faye, he's like, "Don't worry, I got a great offer. He's going to love this." And she's like, "I don't know. He seems pretty upset." He's like, that's when you get him. So he goes back there, and while he's back there, we have return of the metal detector.
Yes.
Yeah, this is what we don't like, because we're like a rare revisit from the cold open.
And is it only just to introduce that, no, I haven't found the pilot's wings? Is that all, like, the whole purpose he has the metal detector there?
It kind of, like, leads to a pretty fun joke, because he's like he's, yeah, you're right. Like, it's just a show that he's been looking for them.
Yes.
And he says, like, well, maybe they spontaneously combusted, and Faye is like, that's ridiculous. You hear Joe yelling, "I'm not gonna sell," and then Roy comes out with like that offer on fire, and then Lowell says, oh, what was I thinking?
That's a great win for Lowell, but I think is this another OCD violation? Because would someone with OCD like light paper on fire in their office?
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, and like, yeah. But that was visually one of, there wasn't, this show, one thing that pleases me about the show is I never expected to have so much great physical comedy. And this is one of the very few, like, physical moments of where something visually is happening that's super interesting. So I liked that moment.
Yeah. You have, like Joe trying to stick the folder in is, like, a fun physical moment. You have mm-hmm. this.
Yeah, seeing Roy and Lowell on cots giving blood was a great visual for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Joe comes out of the office and he's like, is Brian not here yet? And he tells Faye, you know, like, make an announcement. And he starts to tell her, like, what to announce. And she's like, I've been doing this for, you know, X number of years. I can make an announcement. And then she chokes.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty fun.
When Brian comes in, did you notice that the bumper sticker's back on his suitcase?
Yeah.
I still couldn't read it.
Yeah, same. I don't think it says fuck it anymore, but I also had a really hard time reading it.
Someone online said they thought it might be like a radio station call letters. I think that's plausible.
Okay, I could see that. He says that he was late because he was watching The Nutty Professor in Spanish.
Yeah.
Que loco! Actually died.
And so then Joe's yelling at him, being like, you don't take this job seriously, you don't dress professionally. And then I like that joke. Brian says, like, sorry, I've been busy, like, doing all the flying here. I haven't had time to shop at Mr. Dolman. Mm-hmm.
But what did you think about them just, like, openly having a fight in the terminal? They kind of go into the office and then come back out and talk about unprofessional, like chewing out your employee, having a family squabble, like right in front of the people that wish they were in the air right now flying on your plane.
I felt like Joe doesn't deserve to own an airline.
Yes, like, that's a great point.
It's crazy how, like, yeah, like how open he's having the open fight in front of everybody, and then he like fires Brian. Mm-hmm. And instead of like having Brian like run this flight, he's losing so much money.
Yes.
That's got to be so much money.
And I'm glad you brought it up because, like, later on when he's trying to hire another pilot, I had the same thought. If Joe cannot pay people a competitive rate that someone with a highly skilled person that's a pilot deserves to be paid, then he doesn't deserve to be in business.
I mean, I guess, like, the idea is that maybe he was flying himself. And he was going to do that until he, like, built the business up to a point that he could pay other people. But, uh-huh. Yeah, it's I like, when we get to the next scene, I wrote down, how cheap is Joe?
Yeah, and we've seen them in the – and, like, also just the fact that we see them both at the airport so much tells me they have a booking problem. They could be booking more flights, getting more people, like, drum up more. They've alluded to that he does good charter business, like, I don't know, for VIPs and stuff, like – Get the charter stuff going. I don't think he has a business money making mindset.
Oh, by the way, Joe's tie report. We have another plain brown tie with a flat bottom tied to a length where the bottom just barely covers up the belt buckle of the belt that holds up his pleated khaki pants, a blue long sleeve shirt tucked in, the sleeves rolled, costumer choice, the rolled sleeves give him a touch of coolness. Well, do you think that the costume people had to be like, you know what, let's at least like roll his sleeves up a little bit. We gotta make him like pretty square, but he can't be like completely square.
Yeah, they had fun with him this time, and a scene later they'll even unbutton his shirt a little bit.
Oh, yeah. You liked that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I thought it was, like, pretty fun in the middle of their fight having, like, Faye constantly, like, announce the flight, yes. Cancel the flight, announce the flight. And then we get, like, another instance of, like once Joe fires Brian. And he fired, like, I went back and rewatched it because basically, like, he has her announce the flight's canceled, and she announces the flight is canceled, and then he fires Brian. And I love, like, Faye being like, well, he goes, "You're fired." And Faye's like, "What did I do? He's the one."
Yes, that was great. And then,
yeah,
and her, no, sir, no way, yes. Can't do it, nuh-uh. That
return, yeah,
I love.
You want another announcement? You do it yourself.
Yeah.
I thought that was really fun. Wing, 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 wing.
The phone's ringing.
Wing, 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 wing.
I thought I took the ringer off. Okay, fine. Wait, I remember Faye said I don't have to answer
wing,
the phone.
Wing, wing,
maybe
wing.
I'll just let it. No, I can't stop myself.
Wing, 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 wing.
Okay, fine. Hello?
Yeah. Is this Wingsnuts?
Yes, this is the Wingnuts lines.
Yeah, this is Dr. Bennett. No first name. I'm just calling to say that, like, I don't appreciate you guys calling my medical ethics into question on your podcast.
Come on, man. You really think it's fair to ground a pilot when you just do a quick cursory blood pressure test
in
an airplane hangar?
Yes, I do. I am one of the top 25 doctors on Nantucket Island. I think that, like, when I make a rule, that rule should be followed. Do you want people with high blood pressure flying airplanes up in the sky?
You know what? I want a plane in the sky. I got to get off the island.
Oh, my God.
Get to work.
Are you
And you're
kidding
grounding,
me?
Like, one of the only pilots?
What is wrong with you? Did you just say that you want a plane in the sky?
Yes. Yes. A
oh
plane. I believe
God.
A plane should have a pilot.
You are insane. I was going to say... I was waiting for you to agree with me that you don't want somebody with high blood pressure flying a plane. I was expecting you to agree with me because then I could lead to the overall overarching point that nobody should be in the sky. Planes should not exist. Why do planes exist? Oh my God, it is not natural.
So this is, you have an anti-plane agenda. You're just trying to ground a good man. You
they're
know,
heavy.
They're heavy. They're also aerodynamic.
The only things that should be in the sky are angels and maybe a couple of moths.
No.
Birds, not even birds. That's so unnatural.
No, I see now what you're doing. You have this agenda and, like, high blood pressure. Come on. Like, I who doesn't have high blood pressure? It's like one of those things that everyone has, like HPV.
That's beside the point. You're right. HPV is a great point. Yes. Nobody with HPV should fly. Oh, my God. I'm writing that down right now. That is going to be the next thing I submit to the FAA. We are going to ground all the pilots. We're going to have a guy that's free of debris. No birds, no airplanes, no space X, XY, XZ. Ugh.
Dude. You know, I think.
Sorry, I'm smoking a cigarette over here.
Okay. You have some gall, dude. Like, this guy is running a blood drive in his hangar for you. You're going to make untold profits off of literally the blood of this airline, and then you're squeezing the blood right out of him, taking away his ability to earn.
Hey, here's a little secret for you. Blood drives are just my in, you know? Yeah, I convince all these airlines around Nantucket Island, all 11 of them. I tell them, like, you got to run a blood drive. That way I can get in there and I can, like, figure out what's wrong with each pilot, get them to stop flying. You got to work with me on this, buddy. You got to understand, right? Like, it's unnatural for things to be in the sky. Well, get out of there. I don't think that there should be clouds. Clouds freak me out. One time, I how people are always talking about how, like, a cloud looks like this, a cloud looks like that, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Well, I saw a cloud. It didn't look like anything. It was my dead dog Skippy chasing after a Frisbee with half of its ear kind of drifting off into the ether.
Oh, yeah.
Freaked me out, man.
Okay, I'm with you there, because I saw on TikTok that some of these planes in the sky make chemtrails. Which
on a clock? What are you talking about? TikTok?
Yeah, some of these planes are making chemtrails, which is like a man-made cloud if you think about it.
Oh, my God. You're right. Yeah, like, it's like these things that shouldn't be in the sky making new things that just shouldn't be in the sky. And, like, I don't even understand it. It's so weird. The only thing that should be in the sky are angels and paper moths. And I'll make an exception for when you put a candle inside of a paper bag because it just kind of looks cool.
Yeah, you're sending your dreams and hopes and wishes into the sky.
That's exactly why there shouldn't be any planes in there, because they're just like, when I pray to God, I don't want like an airplane and with the mm-hmm. chemtrail like flying through and disturbing that prayer. I want one way thing. I say, God, what's wrong with my patient? God says, they had too much blood on them. I go, okay, we're going to pull some blood out. We're going to see if that fixes it. Most of the time it doesn't because of those airplanes and their chemtrails.
You make me a little nervous. I question your prowess at being a doctor. It worries me a bit that you're treating this community of Nantucket. But, you know, I wish you the best. I hope your business is... I hope your business has gone under in ensuing years.
Well, you know what? I kind of like you. Like, why don't you come over for a dinner maybe sometime this week? Wait, are you even on this island?
No. I am from a city with angels in it, though.
How are we talking right now? How are you communicating with me? Hello?
You called me on the phone.
Yeah, I called you on my landline. I dialed my rotary dial 13 times to dial your phone number, and now you're talking to me, but you don't. I don't know any cords that go off the island. Oh no. Oh,
we have
my
a
God.
Cell phone.
Gotta go. Honey, what? Take off all your clothes. I'm taking a bath. Honey, take off all your clothes. I'm taking a bath. I'm going to take a bath. I'm taking a bath. Take off all your clothes. All right. Have a nice day.
Okay, goodbye, doctor.
Bye.
Okay, that was an odd doctor. Dr. Bennett.
Ooh, that's some good water.
Emerson, are you back?
I'm back, yeah. What's up?
Dude, Dr. Bennett called from Wings.
Oh, crazy. The guy, that character on the show that had the same voice as me?
Yeah, the plot makes a lot more sense now because he had an anti-plane agenda.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
He's an anti-planer. And then he's like, it's like a few days later, I guess, and Joe's been trying to hire a new pilot and not getting anywhere.
Yeah, we're back in his office, and he's on the phone. He was like, no, like the salary I had in mind is actually like lower than that.
Yeah.
Lower.
Mm-hmm.
Lower.
And he doesn't deserve to be in business. And he deserves a pilot like Brian, someone who's like doesn't really care to be on time and doesn't dress appropriately.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
The tailspin dude, you know, hanging out like in the cave.
Yes. It was cool that, like, yeah, like we alluded to, his shirt was open, nice, looking nice. And he hasn't shaved a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking kind of nice when he's, like, unkempt. Maybe that's
not
just
too
me.
Shabby, yeah. But, like, yeah, Helen comes in. She suggests that he rehire Brian. And is this where he talks about that he wants to open up a frozen yogurt place? Or is that later?
I think that's later. Yeah, that's later, after he decides to sell to Roy.
Oh, yeah, because she's like, I got a pilot of mine. He's like, well, who is that? And she's like, well, rumor is you guys used to take baths together. And he's like, I don't want to hire Brian. And she's like, I wasn't talking about Brian. I wasn't necessarily talking about Brian. It was silly, but I thought it was funny. Yeah. And then the guy calls back, hello? Lower.
The one thing this scene does is it does give a little very slight advance to the Joe and Helen relationship, because when he's kind of like, you know, why do you want Brian back so much? And she's like, well, because I love him and I'm carrying his baby.
Oh, yeah.
And just the jealousy Joe has in that moment, even though it was like clearly a joke, it's just okay. They're nudging that relationship down the road just a little bit.
Scene 5 is a transition from the previous scene with soft piano music. It's like Joe walking around his airline in the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote in my notes, oh my God, please let this be a musical. Joe, sing to your airplane.
Yes.
Because like the way it's so weird, the way that scene opens, it really feels like they were setting up like for like Joe to be like, Sandpiper Air, what have you done to me? Mm-hmm. And then a door opens up with smoke in the open doorway, and like, yeah, a magic man walks in.
He's like a fucking magic angel.
Yeah.
Old he was an old Delta captain, and I guess he's dead now, and he came to replace Joe's lost wings. And this motherfucker Joe is just like, oh, these are plastic. Mine were...
I have, like, so many notes on this scene.
Yeah.
It's a funny idea that this guy shows up, and Joe thinks that he's going to, like, solve all his problems. But it turns out that the guy's just there to, like, replace his wings. They're not even, like a proper replacement. But, like, the way that they execute it, I feel like, is done a little poorly.
The angel should have done something to affect the inertia of the plot in some way. Like...
Yeah. Like, why did you, you know, like, question Joe? Like, why did you, like, do this in the first place? Or, you know, like, find something inspiring to say, or, like, force Joe to think about things a little bit.
If I had to, like, stretch it and give them the writer credit, I would say, like, okay, the angel giving him the plastic wings and not being able to fly for him like Joe thought he would. Okay, maybe that's, like, the point of no return for Joe, and, like, that's the point where he realizes, okay, it's a lost cause. But an angel's standing in front of you, like, magic, that you now have proof in front of your eyes that the afterlife exists, heaven exists, God exists, and you don't even carry any sort of, like, feeling of that with you into the next scene. You're still just, like, worried about your petty little airline. Like,
yeah,
because this is the moment where right after the scene is when he goes in and says, okay, Roy, I'm ready to sell.
Yeah.
So, like, was Joe figuring, like, okay, if an angel can't save me, then there is no hope. I'll just sell the airline.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's what's happening.
But, like, I needed to see Joe, like, say something like, oh my God, I just saw an angel, and have that realization, like, in some way to the audience so we know what's happening.
Yeah.
But instead he's just, like, totally unfazed, and it had me wondering, like, could he be hallucinating? Does, like, high blood pressure ever cause hallucinations where you might see an angel? I feel like a dick for, you know, hating that scene, but I just don't think it was well executed. And, like, if you have a magical realism like that in a show, I feel like it needs to come in like the first act, and it has to somehow, that the episode is Joe sees an angel in the first scene, and then the rest of the scene he's having, like, an existential crisis because of it, and, like, I don't know, something.
I think the scene is, like, a series of false premises, like when the door, like, well, I mean, for me too, like, when the first scene begins, I'm like, this is a musical. It's not a musical.
Yes.
And then when the door bursts open and there's this guy entering through, like, a cloud of smoke, I feel like the writer's intention is for the audience to be like, what is this guy, like, an angel? But then it turns out that it's just, like, a seasoned old pilot showing up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that they meant it to actually be an angel. I think that they meant it to feel like it was at first, and then it ends up being, like, a real guy.
So you're saying he's not an angel?
I'm saying he's not actually an angel. And then I think that, like...
He has a line about him, like, coming from heaven, though. He has a line, like, when Joe's like, oh, wings? And he goes, don't worry about it. I have a whole box of them from where I come from.
From, yeah, being a pilot.
I thought he meant, like, from up in heaven, like... How angels famously have, like, a box of trinkets like that.
To continue my thought, though.
Pilot just show up?
Real quick. I just think that, like, the second premise is that he's an angel, he's not an angel. And then the third, like, false premise is that Joe thinks he's going to be, like, his new pilot, but he's actually just there to give him, like, plastic wings. So it's kind of like... a set of expectations that each one turns out to not be true.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to you. What were
so
you
it doing? Emotionally works kind of for you because they're pulling
no,
the rug out?
No, it fails because I think that's, I feel like that's what the writers intended. But then I think that, like, in execution, it doesn't actually, like, work that well.
But he is an angel, right?
The guy in the end says that he saw the notice that Faye had put
up. Oh, okay. Because I was like, how would he know that Joe lost his wings? Okay, so he's not an angel.
No.
And he just saw the notice and then came and brought the wings through. Okay.
But he does feel like an angel. Like, it's a weird scene. It's a really, really... And I kind of admire the show for trying something weird like this.
Yeah.
But it also, like, I feel like it doesn't quite work.
You know what? I honestly feel, like, a lot better now knowing that he's not intended to be a literal angel. I don't know. Maybe I thought the production design was great if he was an angel, but
yeah,
maybe the smoke pouring through the hangar with like the high lighting behind him was a bad move if you didn't want me to think he's an angel.
A little much. Yeah. I think they could have toned it down a little bit. It could have been like, maybe they could have made a joke about like, oh, it's really foggy out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Something.
Yeah. Because then, I also thought it was like funny that they like the punchline of the scene is like Joe's like, oh, I thought that you were gonna be my new pilot, and he goes like, oh, for what you're paying, I wouldn't wash your plane for that.
Yeah. Wait, how does he know what Joe's paying though? Was he the guy on the phone earlier?
Oh my god, phone? Maybe. That's so funny. Lower. But this guy also flew for Delta, which I'm sure is like an airline,
yeah,
that probably pays really well.
Oh yeah.
So I'm sure this guy is not interested in like flying for like
some rinky-dink Nantucket outfit.
Mm-hmm.
God, I was, dude, I'll just be honest, I was ready to give this episode a 1, but now I'm like torn now that I know it's not an angel.
Oh yeah, it wasn't an actual angel.
I feel better now, but I also need a moment to recover.
Okay.
I'm just going to sit with myself here a moment.
Okay. So the next scene, we transition from the previous scene back into the airport where Joe agrees to sell Sandpiper Air to Roy. And Roy, yeah, another fantastic tie, and also just like his celebration is so fun. Which also like is like an unresolved thing at the end of the episode.
We don't get to see Roy be pissed off that he's not getting Sandpiper Air.
Yeah, but also like Joe's like, you have to agree not to fire Faye.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh no, not Amelia Earhart.
Great line.
Such a Roy joke. Yeah, then Helen yells at him for agreeing to sell, and this is when we get the whole run of, yeah, opening a frozen yogurt place, which I like also wrote like, there's probably like a dozen of those on Nantucket Island.
At that point,
1990.
So?
Oh my God, 1990 was like the
was peak frozen yogurt.
Yeah, it was like, what's TCBY? Like, or the country's best, yeah, yogurt?
Yeah.
Then there was a couple others. They were everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy that like Joe's idea. I'm sure that he like just in his rage, in his blind rage, just like tripped over a fucking empty frozen yogurt cup and is like, that's what I'm gonna fucking do. I'll just make frozen yogurt.
You know how many people it's their dream to one day open a frozen yogurt shop and they like try and scrimp and save for it and they never get that nut they need to like open that shop, and then this guy's just like shitting all over their dream.
You gotta get that nut.
You know what I mean, like that lump. They can never save up quite enough to like,
you gotta get that lump.
pay a graphic designer to pay for the to design their storefront sign, and they can't get the deposit, and they can't get the money to buy the machines and stuff. And
all right, and so scene 7. We're in the hangar. Joe's sitting in like the airplane, and Brian comes in, and I wrote again, oh my god, please be a musical this time.
Uh-huh.
A duet between Brian and Joe.
Yeah,
like sing in my airplane. That'd be so great.
The scene would have been less gay if it was a musical between Brian and Joe.
I thought it was a sweet scene.
it was a sweet unearned scene. I'll say it was unearned. I felt,
yeah,
I felt in the fight between Brian and Joe, there was,
yeah,
like unearned, unwarranted emotional heights, and then I felt in this resolution it dragged on too much. Brian had one line I liked, which is, flying is like a secret that nobody else knew. It's a great secret, Joe, keep it. Like,
yeah,
that did it for me. Like, that was enough, but there was just too much emotionality between them that, you know, I just didn't feel it was, I felt the conflict between them was forced, so I didn't feel this was earned.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did like about it is, at this point in the show, like a little deep into the second season, it's kind of cool to have Brian have a moment where he can make the decision to stay at Sandpiper Air.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was kind of, him and Joe were kind of forced into this relationship. But now we know he can get another job with, what was it, TWA or whatever. I like the context of this scene, the information that happens in it.
I wrote that I liked that, like, Brian kind of shows some emotional maturity here. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Brian realizes that Joe is acting out because, you know, he's struggling with his own thing. And then Brian comes back and he, like, lies to Joe saying that, like, TWA wouldn't take him and all this stuff. And then Joe's like, well, no, they called me, so I know that you're lying. And Brian tries to, like, you know, continue to be like, yeah, well, but, you know, they want me to cut my hair and, you know, wear long pants. And Joe stops him and he's like, you did a nice thing. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that's true.
I enjoy that. And then at the end, we get maybe the one potential PC violation is like Brian talking about strafing the girls who unstrap their bikini tops when they like sunbathe on the beach.
Yes.
Which is, I also like really enjoyed because I remember being on the beach, you know, like as a kid and seeing like, you know, like women would like lie on their stomach and then unstrap their bra so they wouldn't get that tan line.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, I was just like immediately like went back to that time when he said that. Yeah. And then like, yeah, the episode ends transitioning into like footage of the two of them as kids playing airplanes on the beach.
Yes.
Which I thought was like interesting, like a kind of, this episode wasn't very funny, but it kind of was sweet and kind of, I don't know. I didn't love it, but...
Yeah, I'll sum it up for myself. It just felt like too many ideas that weren't paid off well enough. Case in point, Lowell, we needed more business with the metal detector, something funnier.
Yeah.
Joe losing his wings and then just kind of finding them on his seat at the end. It's,
yeah, which...
Come on, like...
I feel like that's supposed to signify that, like, maybe... You know, he hit that point. Like, he's, like, ready to, like, confront the high blood pressure or something again.
Yeah.
And, like solve that problem. But, yeah, it is a weird ending. And then we don't get to see Roy flummoxed by the fact that, like, he's not selling the airline after all.
What a missed opportunity. Ever since 9/11, there's a lot of them.
You know what? When people say ever since, I often hear Emerson. So it sounded like he said Emerson's 9/11.
Yeah. You ever listen to Ever Since Lincoln Palmer? What would you rate this episode of Wings?
I'm going to go flat down the middle, 2.0. No wings because Joe lost his and I lost mine.
Yes. And as I kind of said, I was all set coming into this to give it a one stripe rating, right hot on the heels of my four stripe rating last week. But the fact that I'm an idiot and totally misunderstood that there was no angel in this episode after all, and I was just a little bit confused, I'm going to up it to two stripes. But I still feel this episode was throwing a lot of ideas at the wall and they didn't really stick, and there was unwarranted emotional beats, and yeah, so
I agree.
Too much sentimentality, not enough yuck yucks, and ideas that didn't pay off.
Yeah, it was like an episode that wasn't very funny. Like, it dealt more with like kind of like the emotional struggle of like of Joe being grounded, Joe like struggling to save his airline, but then even that got kind of abandoned, where it's like, yeah, like, he's not really doing anything to save the airline. He's just kind of being mopey about it. But then, like, in the end, he never has to eat crow.
Yeah.
Like Brian comes and, like, basically Brian saves his airline because Brian's, like, you know, reminds him that at one point he had a purpose with it. But, like, I don't know. I mean, depression's real, so maybe we can just chalk it up to that.
Yeah, but you could have the story could have been executed in a tighter way. That was more fun to watch. This was not fun to watch, this episode.
Yeah, yeah. And I do like, I am a fan of sitcoms taking, like, you know, like stepping into like a more serious territory to kind of like tell like an emotional storyline. But I feel like this one just didn't work.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, this was Wings Nuts. Okay. Next week we will return with season 2, episode 9, Friends or Lovers.
Heyo.
Thanks for watching this episode and talking about it with me, Emerson.
Thank you, Jared. And yeah, next episode is on Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, any future episodes, I think episode 11 coming up is not on Paramount Plus. So we'll make that available for anyone.
Excellent. Yeah, so let us know if you are a completist and want to see some episodes that aren't on Paramount Plus. We can maybe help you out. So thanks for talking, Emerson.
Yeah, thank you, Jared.